Welcome to Bittersweet Symphony, where I explore the bitter, the sweet, and the bittersweet memories and experiences of my fellow classical musicians, whose lives suddenly changed in March 2020 when a global pandemic hit and we put down our instruments for the first time since we were kids. My name's Cliona Ryan and I'm a violinist. Today, I'm going to be sharing my conversation with Katrina Frost with you. Katrina is an incredible percussionist who has travelled and toured all over the world and who today will be sharing her bitter, her sweet and her bittersweet memories of an incredible creative and personal journey that she went on during this time. This is Katrina Frost.
Yeah, it was a very important 18 months for me. It was the best and worst year of my life. To look back on it, it's very emotional, but good, really good as well, because so much good came out of it that I'm reminding myself today of how far I've come through it all, where I'm at now, and reminding myself of the commitments I made to myself during those months to really listen to my gut feeling about things.
Where do you want to start with that, Katrina?
So ringing in the year 2020, I was triple jobbing. I was doing Oliver in the concert hall, doing the NSO New Year's Day concert. And then I was on a barge in front of Custom House the night before with fireworks playing. What I'm trying to set up is that when you're a freelance musician, you don't say no to anything and you make sure you're in all these different worlds so that if one or two elements dropped, there would always be something else. I was doing all this because I was going away for a 3.5 month tour with Celtic Woman in the States. And it's really important for me to be like, I'm only gone for 3.5 months. Don't forget about me. Don't box me off.
So you had started the tour with Celtic Woman?
Yeah. So I'd packed up my house in Dublin to sublet it for 3 months. I packed my bags, really packed up, and left for the States. And we were in tech week, you know, and you know how mental that is. You're in the theatre all day long. You're learning new music. You're in a real, real bubble. And then the first case started in the States, in New York. And I was watching CNN, the hotel room, going, this is bad. Like, this is bad. So we showed up to sound check and we're all kind of going, what's going on? You know, and then the next thing we were like thrown on a flight home. So then managed to get the house back. So I myself and my partner moved back in. And then it was just so quiet. Everything was just so quiet. I remember my phone pinged one day and I kind of went, like, what could that be? Is that NSO? I realized how much I'm in, like, alert all the time. Like, I didn't realize I was kind of operating from that place. So it took a while to relax into it, a few weeks. And then I started making masks. I had a sewing machine well before, I might add, the government made it compulsory. So I suppose with just things being so quiet and calm, I just settled into it and listened to my gut. And my gut was telling me to leave the long-term relationship that I was in. So it was during the 2K lockdown and it was quite dramatic. I was like, I'm getting the train. And I didn't even know if I'd be allowed on the train from Dublin to Cork. The lockdown was brilliant in the sense of privacy. It just meant I didn't have to see anyone. It was nice, you know. I went back to my parents' house and my sister was there. And we're both back with mom and dad.
What do you mean about privacy, Katrina? You mean you didn't have to explain yourself to people? Or
didn't have to explain myself, didn't have to go into work. And as a musician, I think we have to, more than anyone else, put on the kind of happy face, I think.
Sure.
The performance element and just, I didn't have to see anyone. I started counselling immediately. So I was like, need help with this. So yeah, that was great.
Wow.
Brilliant. The best thing I've ever done. Yeah. So I'd highly recommend that, even if you don't really need to go, just go anyway.
Totally. Well, I'm totally on board with that. I actually found that when everything stopped, there was just space for everything to come.
Exactly.
The good and the bad.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
And so I guess you were in a space where you were really supported as well to do that with your family. And
yeah, big time. I mean, like my parents and my sister Sinead in particular, definitely got me through it. And my friends. The friends I really needed were my non-musician friends. And I haven't been to their hen parties. I haven't gone to weddings. I haven't done a million things that a normal friend does because I'm always away, you know. And I was like, oh, are they even there? And oh my God, they were there. And it just meant the world to have all that support because I was really worried that I'd sacrifice too much, maybe because of work. And when work was gone, it was like, well, what's left, you know? So I was at home for a little while, and it came up just in conversation that we have neighbours here, and they live like 3 fields from my house, but we don't know them, you know. But because of the restrictions, my sister and my mom bumped into this couple, and they were saying, oh, we had just built an artist residence cabin on their grounds. I rang them immediately the next day. And I think when you're coming from a place where you have absolutely nothing, your life, you're literally back in your parents, you've no work. When you feel really afraid of life, and when you're working from a place of depletion, you have to ask for help, get used to asking for help.
How did it feel to ask for help?
Terrifying. Terrifying. Like, I was sending emails with my hands shaking, kind of going, what? Like, so outside of my comfort zone. I'm a bit too proud, maybe. Like, I want to do everything by myself and that kind of thing. So I went up to the couple and they said, yeah, we let it out for a week or 2 weeks max. And I said, OK, that's fine. It doesn't suit me, so, because I would need it for at least a month. And they rang me later in the evening and they said, look, come on, up for the month. So it's basically a cabin. And what you do is you work on whatever you want to work on, or not work on it. Just be there in this beautiful setting. And you do a bit of, you help out as well on the land, which was brilliant for my head. I was picking weeds and shoveling and digging and
amazing,
and all that stuff. And they have a plunge pool pond. So I'd jump in that in the morning to reset, you know, total privacy, no one else around. And yeah, I was being home, but not home, working and stuff in a creative way. And it was incredible. It was the making of me. It was brilliant. And in the counselling at the time, she was saying, it still comes up, you know, sow the seeds now for in the spring to grow. Just sow seeds, just potter about, sow seeds. And I did my first Arts Council application form, trying a lot of new things. So what I did in the cabin was kind of really reflect on me as a musician. From when I started playing, there was always sheet music in front of me, and just exploring, is there a creative bone in my body? Are there melodies in there? Are there tunes? What, like, I feel like I've been a performing robot, a bit of a monkey, doing what we do, basically. But I was kind of, I had all the space and I was really intrigued to see what's in there. Like, is there anything in there? Yeah, I've been around music my whole life. You know, I started at, like most musicians, at 4 or 5 years old, yet I've never kind of been creative. I've never had the time. We're always busy. Just this amazing freedom. No ties, nowhere to be. That was fabulous. Those 6 weeks were really great, and sowed some seeds, and I'm still following through on that stuff. It was hard work, now I'm not going to lie. Like, there was days I was on the floor, you know, with everything going on. But in general, the work I put into the counselling and the exploring and actively trying to get myself out of darkness and all that kind of paid off in the end, I think.
Was the darkness as a result of the loss of your relationship, or was it just the fact that there was all this stuff there that had just been never had time to have any attention or care or be heard?
Yeah, exactly, both. It was kind of dealing with the immediate stuff, but then also I really wanted to stick with it and roll up the sleeves and go into that child therapy stuff and really, yeah, dug deep there. You know, I didn't want to leave any stone unturned, particularly going forward with my life. Just didn't want to be carrying anything that I don't need to be carrying. So, okay, let's just have a look at everything. So it's difficult, like, you know, but obviously well worth it in the long run if you're in with the right person and in capable hands. And just a memory just popped into my head of seeing, I saw a good few red squirrels. I've lived here my whole life and I've never seen them, but they live up in this forest just a few fields away. So little moments of wonder like that were incredible.
Yeah, like messengers of hope or brightness or something, like flames, little flickering flames.
Yeah.
But that's an incredibly brave journey to go on. It's like a deep excavation. Jung calls all that our shadow, and he considers it our responsibility to understand our shadow, not only for ourselves, but for all the relationships in our lives, you know?
Yeah, because it affects everything, your work relationship. Yeah. And it's interesting, at the start you recommended the book Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, you know, and I was like, do you know what? I've been actually living my life on that bloody principle. If you get a gig or something, you're like, oh, yeah. God. Feel it and do it anyway. And I said, actually, I'm trying to get away from that. Anyway, eventually I did get the book, and the Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway is that being courageous and brave enough to, like, say for my application, I reached out to mentors that I would consider myself a fan of people's playing, and to reach out and say, can you teach me? That was really important. Surrendering to the fact that, you know, when you're gigging, you kind of have to show up with a sense of bravado and I'm in control and it's part of showbiz. But I loved the surrendering and saying, can you teach me? I want to learn, and being vulnerable again. And then, so after that 6 weeks ended, I had to move home again. And then I started having a look at places to live. So, like, being a percussionist, I have a lot of instruments and equipment that were all locked up, and it just felt like such a waste. I have all this stuff and I can't play them because I don't have a suitable workspace. Eventually, through word of mouth, found a house in West Cork that I was going to rent for 3 months. It was a big holiday home, four double bed house, but it was going for a much, much cheaper rate because it was off peak and it was pandemic. So I moved there October last year. Yeah. So it was supposed to be for 3 months, and then it ended up being 7 months. So I lived for 7 months.
See, in this palace of percussion, like, it's all there.
It was all there. The house was so big that, like, all the gear went in the dining room.
Did you go full feral?
I wasn't seeing, like, the longest I didn't see anyone was kind of 11 days. But you know what? I wasn't lonely. Like, I was less lonely than I've been in a lot of times. I've been lonelier surrounded by people. It's really fascinating. So I was doing the cold swimming and all that. I did that all through winter and all. A really sweet memory is that Mom, Dad and Sinead came down and we had Christmas in that house. It was cool. Mom got in and Sinead on Christmas Day as well with me in the water. And it was brilliant.
You got to kind of mind them as well, which is probably just such a lovely thing to do.
It was a real confidence boost because I had been solo and so dependent on them that it was really lovely to be able to host Christmas and get a tree and do all that. It was really lovely. Yeah.
Were you practicing a lot? Were you playing a lot?
Well, funnily enough, like, you know, when you have the perfect environment, no distractions, everything set up, you still find reasons to procrastinate. It's kind of amazing, really. Like, I went to Bantry and I got one of those massive A3 papers, you know, those huge kind of ones that they have, or is it A1 actually, in office spaces, Joe, and they write down ideas and they tear it off the wall. So I'd write down a schedule for the next day. Like, I was really just trying to stay healthy, mentally healthy. And that's what I was doing.
Were you still talking to your counsellor?
Absolutely. And I heard another podcast recently where a gardener described it as, it's gardening. Every now and again, you have to go back in and pick out a few weeds and things that have been creeping up. So I started going fortnightly because I was feeling a lot better. And then if something was coming up where I felt, let's do weekly again. But she's funny. Like, it can be a funny chat as well.
Yeah.
Actually, during lockdown, when I was at home, there was a fella outside who was building a wall for my folks. He's a local guy, so he was within his 2K. Anyway, it was lovely. He was outside and he said all he could hear from the house, a house of musicians now, all he could hear was laughter. So that was a lovely thing to hear during a time that was actually very dark. It was a lovely thing for someone to notice. But talking about sowing the seeds I sowed kind of during all of this, one of them that came to fruition was an application to Centre Culturel Irlandais in Paris. I applied to see, could I spend some time there? And I got it. So I'm actually going off at the end of this month to do that. It's actually great to talk to you today just to remember where all this came from and what I want to bring to Paris. Because, as you said, a lot of the gigs kind of came back this summer and it's easy to get caught up in that world again.
The pull is strong. It's like a tide. It's like a really strong tidal pull, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. And being able to go back to the gut feeling, what is my gut telling me to do, and trying to channel that.
Those type questions that you were asking yourself about, am I a creative soul? Are you getting answers to those questions? Have you found answers?
Yeah, all of that. But I think creativity takes practice as well. Like, it's like anything else, from talking to creatives, it's actually a discipline as well of sitting down and writing something, anything, even if it's junk that's going to be thrown out. It's a discipline as well.
That's why people call it a creative practice, because it's a thing that you do, as opposed to a thing that you are, you know. Out of all your kind of reflection and your thinking, was it difficult to choose three specific memories? And have we already talked about what they are?
Can you remind me of that question again?
So the three specific: a bitter memory, a sweet memory, and a bittersweet memory. If you were to have a little time capsule and you could put one of each of those in, what would they be?
Yeah, the bitter one is easy, I suppose. That would be like the loss of a relationship and work. Like, that was pretty bitter. I meant to say at the start and I forgot, COVID didn't affect me personally, my family, and my heart just goes out to people who had to mourn massive losses in this environment. So as hard as it was, just actually COVID didn't come to our door, luckily.
Yeah.
So that'd be bitter, like just losing everything. And as a freelancer, not being connected to anything.
Yeah.
It literally is, the phone just stops ringing. You have a few colleagues that you check on and you create a kind of a WhatsApp group. But in terms of your employers and stuff, it's pretty much you're on your own. And it was a real reminder of that, a real stark reminder. Sweet memories. That there were some, like Christmas Day, you know. We'll never forget it. Like,
tell me about it.
So it started off with gifts and stuff, and like, I've never laughed so hard. I opened this present for my mom, and she'd painted a painting of me. She doesn't paint. Like, this was her first. She's been talking for years about painting. Her first painting was of me on my birthday, which we celebrated down there with my arms in the air in this kind of victory. Ah, yay! On the beach. A moment of real, just like, life is shit, but who cares? Or I don't know what it was. It was just, I'm fighting back, you know? And she painted this moment, you know? And like, sure, none of us could speak for about 10 minutes. We were just crying, laughing at this painting, you know? It was just very funny. And then we went for a swim and came back, and dad kind of still did the dinner and helped out a bit. And that was just great crack. And then the gang from up the road came down while we were in the middle of our dinner. And we opened the windows and they were outside drinking wine and passing them brandies. And it was just hilarious, like just good crack.
In the midst of it all, it was just so, it was probably amazing just to have that. And as well to have that thing of being able to be able to mind them when they had minded you. It must have been painful for them to see you in pain, in grief and, you know.
Yeah. And they were in grief as well, because, you know, when someone... they're losing someone as well, in a way, you know.
And then your bittersweet memory.
Bittersweet is like, as hard as all those applications and asking for help and everything were, the bittersweet thing is I'm going to Paris next month for a month. That would absolutely never be happening if it weren't for all the pain and all the effort and all the work and all the stuff I had to do, I suppose. Would that classify as bittersweet?
I think bittersweet is like a memory that is... I was just looking at this. Something that contains a mixture of sadness and happiness. You know, like you said, that it was one of the best and one of the worst 18 months of your life.
Like, it was full of bittersweet experiences, because I was being pushed and pushed into these situations that I wasn't comfortable in, that I knew were good for me, that the only reason I was in them is because of pandemic and relationship breakup. So it was bittersweet every day, really. Like, it was... You know,
because it was incredibly transformative for you as well, and positive in so many ways.
Yeah, or else having really positive moments, but then not being able to share it with the person that you're used to sharing it with. But the only reason that you're having this moment is because you've left it in the first place. Or, you know, it's just, it's all very confusing, and it's bittersweet, sweet, bitter, bittersweet. There's this kind of thing going that's, you know, back and forth the whole time.
I mean, for all of us, even all the good stuff was because something terrible was happening, you know?
Yeah. Like, one thing I tried to do was have a different approach coming back to performance. I realized through meditation and breath work and everything during the pandemic how little of my lung capacity I use. And I did a course the last month of my time in West Cork that Music Network was running on befriending performance anxiety. And I just, you know, is there a way that I can be more conscious when I'm playing, that I don't get so elevated and hyped by the situation that I kind of tend to blank out a bit? And also working on my new music, it was kind of going back to this thing of playing on my own, which as a percussionist, we're normally accompanists. And if I want to play my music, I'm going to have to be soloistic about it. So One of the people on this course happened to work for TG Cahir for Flafest. She's a fiddle player that I really respected. And as a fiddle player, as an 18-year-old, I was learning her tunes from her album, trying to play in her style, learning it by ear, and really respected her as a musician. And she was on the course.
Performance anxiety encapsulated.
Oh, it was like, so we, that last session, like we did, this was hanging over me. Oh, Jesus, I have to play like for her. It was gas. We did all our breathing exercises. It's okay. And she said, I'm going to just call the first person I see on the screen. And that person is Katrina. I swear to God, my eyes just welled up straight away. I was just, no. I was so nervous. And so I played the tunes, I introduced them. And then she messaged me privately straight away saying, oh, can you send me your email address? Really love your tunes. Like, and I was like, okay, I have a project in mind. So anyway, the project was that I ended up playing stuff that I wrote in West Cork and in the cabin on national TV for Flafest, which is like, in my mind, Flafest is, Flaciol is the pinnacle of trap. Like, I was like, you want me to what? And I did it. And another moment of complete madness and bravery, I asked Steve Cooney to accompany me and he said yes. Just getting used to asking and like, what's the worst thing that's going to happen is someone's going to say no, and that's totally fine. And I loved doing that because it was my music for the first time. I composed myself. That came completely from me. And the way the gig came about wasn't through word of mouth, through any other thing that I had done before.
It was all you, who you were in that moment as a creative.
It was, I suppose, satisfying that every step of the way I had worked for every note of that I had eventually played, I had worked on it. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. And you're vulnerable in a totally different way. And
yeah,
someone received all of that and thought it was wonderful and wanted to share it with the whole country.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I learned was just having the courage and the bravery to ask. The worst, really the worst thing that can happen is someone can say no, or they're too busy, or da 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 da. But just keep hustling and keep kind of asking and sowing seeds, and career wise, health wise, and realizing that I've actually a bit of control. I thought I'd no control. I thought I was, you know, something bobbing along in a sea. And that's been a big learning experience as well. You know, if anyone's listening that wants, Joe, I think that's really important to, I forgot that other people might be listening. It feels like I'm just chatting to you. But yeah, you know, getting proper help. And I mean that in from every capacity, from getting mental health help, but also getting mentors to teach you something that you really want to learn or to fix about your playing. I was definitely too proud anyway to be, I felt like I had to keep the face up of that I'm controlled and I'm reliable and I can, you know, I don't know what the words I'm looking for.
Do you feel differently about that now?
I feel I've been slipping back in. Yeah, I'm definitely slipping back in now that work is coming back and gigs and...
Yeah.
I suppose it is competitive at the end of the day, you know, and all that stuff. And that completely curbs any creativity for me. Like, I might as well just pack everything up and not play ever again. But again, trusting the gut, trusting your own pair of ears and validating your own stuff is really important. And don't mind everyone else. So, yeah, just finding my voice this past 18 months in all different aspects, you know, just doing things that I have never done before.
Well, I mean, that's why I so like, it's so lovely sharing the story of the last 18 months and how transformative and how really difficult it's been for you and how brave you've been.
No problem. Thanks for the chat. It's good to talk to you.
It was so exciting and inspiring to speak to Katrina. It's an interview that I've returned to many times myself when I've needed a little motivation and inspiration. The Bittersweet Symphony podcast community is a space where you can share your own thoughts using the hashtag Bittersweet Symphony on Instagram at ryan.cliena, on Twitter at clienaviolin, and on the Facebook page Bittersweet Symphony Podcast. Thank you, and until next time.